And we are back with an all-new episode of Keep It. I'm Ira Madison III.
I'm Louis Fertel. I'm in a hotel in New York, and natural lighting is beaming on my face. And in this Zoom, guys, the lighting is so amazing. Do you know what I look like? Washed out in a good way. I look like Shania on the cover of Come On Over. Just like eyes, lips, and naughty.
Okay, you know, I was getting more of a Truman Capote vibe.
Oh, thanks. Wow.
In Cold Blood, you know, that is, yes. that's what, there are no red blood cells in you right now.
No, yes. I'm giving Desperate Crush on a Prisoner. That actually is a really good movie, Capote. It's been ages since I've seen it. But sullen Catherine Keener as Harper Lee, trusty, fag hag but low key, unusual mode for somebody to play. Enjoyed it.
Remember when we were getting a lot of Capote movies?
Yes, we had Infamous with Toby Jones and Sandra Bullock as Harper Lee. That's one of the crazier things we've done.
It's just wild to think about a moment when Hollywood was like obsessed with Truman Capote.
And like, it currently must have been because, yeah, no, it must have been because of the specific voice.
Mm-hmm.
Like, maybe, like, you know, that's just an actor's dream or something. But otherwise, yeah, nothing about him screams Hollywood should pay attention to this truly sniveling gay man.
Yeah, you know, they did Breakfast at Tiffany, and then they were like, okay, we're good. Initially, you know, back in the 50s. But
yeah, no one was rushing to make Other Voices, Other Rooms a thing. Look it up, by the way. Great.
Well, actually, that I feel like is the cover too that I was, it wasn't Other Voices. I think that might have been the cover I was referring to when you were looking very translucent from the natural lighting. There's a great essay on Truman Capote in Hilton Alza's book, White Girls, that people should read.
Oh, and what's the nature of it?
Well, it just talks about, you know, his favorite white women. And he considers Truman Capote to be one of them because Truman Capote was very, you know, effeminate and learned from like Harper Lee and like the other women like of his time. But when he wasn't taken seriously as an author, he shifted hard into masculine with In Cold Blood.
Oh, interesting. He also was not taken seriously, and this is justified, as an actor. Have you ever seen the movie Murder by Death?
Of course I've seen Murder by Death.
Okay, well, it's a movie that's sort of fallen off the planet. It's this Neil Simon movie that is, this is exactly what it is, a precursor to Clue. It's a murder mystery in a house, and all of the characters are based on famous detectives in lore. So there's one based on Charlie Chan that's, of course, Racist Yellow Face by Peter Sellers. There's a Miss Marple send up, etc. And Truman Capote has a sort of plum role as a mysterious member of the household. And it's just shocking to see this man interact with other people in real time, being campy on purpose. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like a Warhol-esque moment for him. But anyway,
yeah, my father,
I mean, he was Golden Globe nominated for that too. You know, the Golden, and by the way, the Golden Globes are back, thank God. Yeah. We should get into that.
My father, Peter Falk, is in that film.
Wait, is Peter Falk one of your faves? I wouldn't be surprised.
Oh, I fucking love Columbo.
Oh yeah, one of the great shows. It's also on Rolling Stone's 100 greatest TV shows list, which I was fuming about the other day. Have you peered at that?
I have not looked at that, but is it a part of your Keep It?
You know what? Maybe I'll save it for that. I will replace my Keep It with the Rolling Stone list. Even though Alan Sepinwall, who writes most of the TV stuff for Rolling Stone, I think wrote the captions for that list. And they're well-written captions, and I am not shading those. Love his work. But some of the choices. Yeah, we'll get into it. Don't worry.
Okay. Getting quickly back to Murder by Death.
Yes.
I think one
also
of the
starring Eileen Brennan, who is also in Clue. Anyway, moving on.
I think one of the most basic things about me is that I like Neil Simon.
Now, are you sure about that?
Well, okay.
I can see it coming like out of your Neil mouth, Simon. And you like how it sounds.
But
name the project where you like Neil nailed it.
Rumors.
That is literally in his top three. I would say The Sunshine Boys with George Burns, also top three. But I mean, Have you seen California Suite recently? It's uncomfortable to be mad at Jane Fonda, and I was.
Well, I was even taking it back when I said it, because I do remember that I saw Sarah Jessica Parker and Matthew Broderick in Plaza Suite, which is one of the worst theatrical experiences of my life.
I've heard that from multiple people. Now, why was that that bad? Because obviously they're both stage veterans, and he specifically is a Neil Simon veteran.
I think we've maybe passed the point for comedy about upper middle class people from the 60s in New York.
Right. I just, none of that resembles reality anymore.
Yes. You know, the comedy is very much appealing to, you know, the Broadway audience of that time, and I think the humor is a little stale. It's not very updated, and it just felt so kitschy. It felt like I was literally plopped into a production from that era, but it didn't have any of, I don't know, like the energy that maybe it had then. I don't know if there was energy. I mean, you know, like people were getting shibbed in Times Square then. So there had to be some energy, you know, just to make it to the theater alive. But now it's like, you know, you're just walking past TKTS. So.
Right. No, but it is interesting to think about Neil Simon. Once Upon a Time was like the definitive Broadway voice, and that he was the exciting new voice. And it's hard to place what the thing was that people were so craving that like was say, but it's like, I guess we just didn't really have light, chill comedies, you know, like things before that were a little bit more screwball or broader maybe. So the fact that it was even a step closer to reality is maybe what appealed to people. You know, you got, he gave fine roles to, I think, people like Maureen Stapleton. Maybe that was thrilling at the time. I don't know.
I enjoy his memoir Rewrites.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you know.
I saw him I saw him at a hotel in L.A. once, and that was shocking to see. Because, I mean, he's died now, and he was with his wife, Elaine Joyce. Uh-huh. Match game veteran, Elaine Joyce. And it's like seeing a building or something, you know, just an actual institution in front of you. There wouldn't be an entire arm of theater without this person.
Yeah, I mean, that was sort of like when, I truly cannot remember where I was, but like, I saw James L. Brooks at a place, and I was just like, it's weird to think of, first of all, it was weird to think that like I know what you look like,
right sort of like being recognized from a podcast. Yeah. It's like, how did you do that?
Uh-huh. Right. Because we're actual television nerds if we know what James L. Brooks looks like.
Right.
Yeah. But Neil Simon,
which, by the way, speaking of which, last night I saw a Kate Berlant's show in New York. If you guys know Kate Berlant, mm-hmm. Wonderful, irreverent comic, often going cross-eyed in the middle of saying something sincere. That's sort of a big part of what she does. She works with John Early a lot. I'm sure you're familiar with her. Saw her show. And then afterwards I was talking to her and I said, God, crazy people must walk through this theater to see you, because everybody's heard of you, wants to see you. And she goes, the craziest was seeing James L. Brooks, who apparently was unbelievably nice. But I was thinking, like, James L. Brooks does not have a single credit that's bad, if I'm remembering correctly. I'm like going through them. What an unbelievable career. And then like to move into the Oscars territory with Terms of Endearment. Simply shocking. I love all these up-to-date references we keep making. Neil Simon, James L. Brooks, thrilling.
Yeah, you know, every season of Taxi wasn't a winner. Anyway, speaking of Kate Berlant, she's also in Don't Worry, Darling.
Yes.
And this is the grand finale of us talking about Don't Worry, Darling.
The trilogy, finally.
And believe it or not, we have one of the stars of the film with us. Guys, Florence Pugh is here.
Shackled, yes. Help, she's screaming.
Can you imagine? Can you imagine?
She will be on this show.
Oh, of course. I truly believe that in my heart. But like, can you imagine if she was just like, you know what? It's over. I'm going to call up, keep it, and I'm going to tell everything.
First of all, we don't have a phone number here at Keep It, but she would know it somehow and call it.
We used to have a phone number. I'm sure it still works.
Oh my God,
we did. We used to take listener.
Somebody give it a shot.
We used to take listener voicemails. I'm sure it's like 555 Keep It or something. It's somewhere. So, you know, the Keep It graveyard. of things. Our phone number is there. Also, Rihanna's hosting the Super Bowl, so we're going to get into that.
And also, our actual guest is Nick Kroll. Did we say that?
Oh, no, we didn't say that. We didn't say that. We're beating the joke into the ground.
A motherfucking hilarious man and also heartfelt man.
Yeah. You know, you can't be a man in comedy without wearing your heart on your sleeve now. Just like Cher Horowitz.
There was some tweet. I wish I could identify the author. I apologize. But he said, oh, yeah, my partner and I are a comedy team. I'm the trauma guy. He's the grief guy. Mocking where comedy has gone in recent years. Super funny. Yeah.
Yeah, Nick Kroll is one of my faves. He's great. So we'll be right back with more Keep It. After months of gossip and headlines and two breathless episodes of Keep It, where we documented the entire press tour of Olivia Wilde's Don't Worry, Darling, it has finally debuted in theaters and claimed the top spot at the box office.
Do you think it would have done that anyway without all this?
Maybe. Harry Styles fans are rabid.
Right. No, I mean, like, there's like six actually mobilized fan bases on Earth. You know, Lady Gaga is one of them.
Mm-hmm.
Selena Gomez is one of them. You know, white supremacy is one of them. And then
the Iggy fans?
Styles. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, he's sold out like what, 15 consecutive nights at Madison Square Garden?
And speaking of 15 consecutive anything, 15 weeks at number one with As It Was, a song that is fine. I don't want to turn it off. It sounds, it has a throwback to a band like Travis vibe. But 15 weeks at number one, bitch, you don't have what Los Del Rio has. Don't start.
I, you know what? I do like the song, and it's funny because we've talked, you know, extensively about Harry on this show, about, you know, like, whether we're into the music, the performance. I feel like I need to see
the
him.
Blouses.
I need to see him not at Coachella, because Coachella wasn't the vibe for me, you know, but maybe it's also like, he's not the vibe when you're in a desert on, a lot of substances. You know,
sure.
Maybe I need to be at Madison Square Garden to, you know, take that in. You know, you need the spectacle of going to a concert, you know, going to see a show.
I just feel like he's one of those people where it would literally be like the Beatles, where you can't hear the music. The people are so rhapsodic, and, you know, that gif of a woman opening her mouth in the Oprah audience and melting into, you know, oblivion.
I love that video. And that, I believe that is from one of her first Favorite Things episodes,
when people had no idea what they were getting into.
Yeah, you think you're just going to see an Oprah episode, and she's like, you're gonna get a car.
Yeah, drop kicking vehicles at you. Yeah.
Side note, the way that those women were horny and rabid in the audience by Oprah saying Favorite Things is
right
terrifying.
The way they immediately knew they could take up space in the aisles. They're like, I'm leaving my seat. I'm pacing around. Because you know Oprah runs a tight ship.
Yeah,
so.
You know, but my favorite things is her favorite blood sport. People died.
Oprah's favorite things is her Ellen's Game of Games. Yeah. Where, you know, yeah, gladiatorial, you know. People get lost in the quicksand. Yeah.
But anyway, getting back to this film.
Oh, yeah. Also, I will say this. So we are taping this as Ira has seen the movie. I have not. By the time we interview Nick Kroll, I will have seen the movie. But we're going to structure this as Ira deciding whether or not I should see it. And then I will decide whether I agree. So go ahead.
No. Let me give a more nuanced answer.
Please.
This movie's a trip.
God.
This movie's a trip.
What? Yeah. So it's a thriller. It feels like something that can be very easily spoiled.
Yes, it can be, you know, and there obviously is a twist. There's always a twist.
And by the way, there's only like 5 satisfying movie twists in history. So if you have a big twist that your movie hinges on, might end up being bad.
Yeah. And the number one is
the Bible.
Oh, all right. No.
Wait, the number one twist of all time, Psycho?
Sure. My number one twist in a film is J-Lo's second act.
No, hold. Oh, right.
The plant from
Hiroshima.
I'm actually
getting that mixed up with Marry Me. Yes. yes, it's not Marry Me. Second act is the one where it's a parenting twist, correct?
Yes, and then also she has a plant that survived Hiroshima. Which she mines to create like the best makeup that doesn't fall off when you cry or something.
That's exactly how science works. That reminds me, of course, of the movie The Boy Next Door. Wait, is that the name of that movie?
Yeah, The Boy Next Door. Yeah, with the first original edition of the Iliad.
The Odyssey.
The Odyssey.
The Iliad. She had a first edition of The Iliad, you know, back before there was like normal paper.
Yeah. You know what? You thought that started as an oral history, but actually it was the first podcast.
And that's right.
The first edition book is actually just a transcription of that.
Oh.
It's funny.
Available on the Crooked website. Yeah.
Right next to some coffee.
Yes, that's right. They love it there.
Was funny thinking about Homer, just like going around telling this long-ass story, just several long-ass stories. It's like the Odyssey and the Iliad are both very long. And you just being like, girl, I've heard this part before. Or you being like,
move it along.
Or just like the, I love like old, like films like set around that time too. You know, there's always like some old man or some woman like sitting by a fire. They're like, tell us about Medusa again. Tell that favorite story of yours about the Argonauts. I'm like, that's what storytelling used to be.
Yes. Yes, right.
You asking someone to retell you
witch
something.
Witch fingers as they tell you about Cersei. Yes. Anyway, back to Don't Worry, Darling. So here's the thing. I feel like all the fear around this movie has been somewhat obviously veiling the fact that this is a rather conventional film.
It is. It's honestly like a conventional thriller, too. I mean, you know, any thriller that lands on the blacklist, you know, it's not going to be
the blacklist has done us wrong.
It's not going to be the French Connection, okay?
Right. Correct. Actually, the deal with the blacklist is it just throws into perspective how much a movie's success is about the production and not just the script.
Mm-hmm.
Or how you can like you can even write the errors of a script via the production, you know.
But you know, like it's also like the in Hollywood, you know, like the script was great. You know, like what does that mean anymore? Because you know, this script was rewritten anyway. By Katie Silverman. Yeah. And
but it's like when I think of the blacklist, I think of The Beaver being on it, you know, that Mel Gibson directed movie with a young Jennifer Lawrence.
Oh, he's so good. When is he going to come on Keep It?
Mel Gibson. He is so good. Guys, if you, I mean, I don't know.
Daddy's Home too. I have a lot of questions.
Yeah. Year of Living Dangerously, the man was fine. And so was Linda Hunt. Moving on.
I try to think about the actors we would have interviewed if this podcast was on in like the 80s, 90s, and how many of them we could then never invite back.
Right.
Because they're evil now.
No, like Mickey Rourke, you know, there'd be a lot of problems.
Antonio Sabato Jr.
Wow. I mean, we would be interviewing him for his one credit.
Melrose Place.
Yes, that's right. No, but okay. Don't Worry, Darling. Does Florence
if you
at
can't
least give
tell,
an A-plus performance?
She's great. Sorry. And also, if you can't tell, we keep talking about anything else.
Right.
But she's good. She's very good in a film that I can't even say whether or not, you know, like people are really bad. It's just that it's sort of like not given a lot to do. She has a lot of scenes that are sort of just by herself. David Fincher had the wherewithal to give Jodie Foster Kristen Stewart in Panic Room, you know, while she's like a woman figuring out things. But a woman figuring out things film is always sort of like a letdown. And I feel like it's a common thing we've seen, like The Forgotten, you know, like a film like mm-hmm. that. But it's just sort of like, it's just scenes of like Florence Pugh just like standing around in this 50s style house, like, or walking around the desert, like looking at things and thinking. And I'm like, is that entertaining?
Well, I mean, that can be compelling in a certain type of movie, like a Todd Haynes movie, for example. But I feel like all these movies, like what you're talking about, want to be Rosemary's Baby. And there is just not a second one of those movies, even including the great, I was about to call it The Inheritance. What's the Toni Collette movie called? Hereditary.
Mm.
I mean, I know you don't love Hereditary as much as you should, but that's okay.
I just thought 20 minutes of it was a little bit too Rosemary's Baby. Mm. Though the rest of it I thought was great. The family tragedy part of it, the part that reminds me of Rabbit Hole, I love. Mm.
Yeah, it always sort of harkens back to Rosemary's Baby. And like the reason I think Hereditary is a great movie, because it's about a woman, like, you know, quote unquote, figuring things out, but it's also linked to family trauma, and it's saying something. I think that ultimately the twist in Don't Worry, Darling doesn't say much.
Yeah, the twist has to be loaded. There has to be some poetry going on.
Yeah, I mean, and it says something, but it's sort of just, you know, so it's a slate essay.
Ooh, got it. Oh, so it could have just been a paragraph instead of a movie.
Yeah.
No, wait. Okay, well, let's get to Harry Styles. What was he bringing thespian-wise? Is he...
Here is the biggest twist of this film. His character is British.
It's never been done. Why is he British in this movie?
Because he is British. And
right,
so
that's familiar.
I also couldn't tell if he's acting British because of the twist. I was very confused by the end of the film. But for the most part, those scenes that we were seeing online where people were like, he's slipping in and out of his accent. I think that was just his modulation in screaming and acting, because that character is British. He's using his own accent in the majority of the film.
Oh, I see. So some of our furor about that clip was, I don't know about misdirected, but we could have used more information.
Yeah. You know, it wasn't, oh, he's doing like six different accents in one scene. It's, he's just doing one, but it's, you know, he's making choices.
Got it.
More than Sophie ever did.
She really only had to make one choice ultimately.
Did she make the right one?
And by the way, it was like tomato tomato.
Yeah.
She's like, this one's closer to you, take her. What is the high point of this movie?
The high point of the movie is realizing it's a Nazi allegory. I'm kidding. But it also is. The high point of the movie, honestly, is watching it in the theater. I saw it in the Williamsburg cinema, and at a certain point, the audience had some things to say.
As in they were upset?
No, upset is just sort of, you know, that instance where, you know, you sort of like lose an audience to the point where they don't hate it, but it's like they're okay with people like openly like making fun of this movie while watching it.
Oh, sure.
And it became that.
Got it.
It's this, you know, there's also, there was a more recent drama coming out this week, right? Where like Kiki Layne tweeted like, all my scenes were cut, but at least I met my new man on the set of this film.
Which, is that smart of her to post? I mean, like, I know like everybody gets cut out of movies sometimes, just like in editing, like it's more convenient if mm-hmm. things get trimmed out or whatever.
She truly just has three scenes, though, and it sort of is wild that a lot of the twist and Florence's realizing things hinges on this. So, I get it. But, you know, I think that I was happy to see her in less of the film, because there was not a black hairstylist on set, and I was concerned every time I saw Kiki on screen.
What's, like, the most egregious example of that, where it... there are black characters in a movie and you can tell the people behind the scenes aren't who they should be?
most Halle Berry films.
Oh, that's a good answer. That makes sense to me.
The wigs. She's constantly in distress.
The wigs move independently of her. Yeah, it's looking one way and she's looking the other.
It's like that movie Bad Hair.
Due to the bad hair, right? Yeah.
Also, a more fun film than Don't Worry, Darling.
Wow. Don't Worry, Darling is taking a beating right now. Luckily, there are truly so many movies I'm looking so forward to. So
I wouldn't recommend watching it, you know, and LOL, us discussing this before we interview Nick. But, you know, I think that all of the controversy, having endured it, it's worth seeing the film. But I unfortunately am not compelled by it much at all. And I think that Olivia Wilde was a rad person when we met her. And I thought that Booksmart was very fun and interesting too. There's unfortunately just like not a lot here.
Were you at all consumed with the idea of what Shia LaBeouf would have been like in it?
Honestly, by the time we got to the film, I forgot about him. I don't think he would have been that much more compelling in the film either, to be honest.
Honestly, based on what I'm hearing about this movie now, it kind of would have been a strange choice for him. Like, it feels not, I don't know,
his Disturbia era.
Yeah. Oh, you know? Oh, all right. Which I was an era I supported once upon a time.
Yeah. You know, his
that movie's good.
His Eagle Eye era. You know,
same era. Yes.
This is
I was very cautious about a Rear Window update, and then it turned out to be really good. But then I realized spying on people as just a casual citizen or whatever is like a universally interesting idea. I don't think Rear Window even invented that.
But. And here's the thing. It's fun. It's basically one of those movies, you know? So like, go see it in the theaters if you want to know about the conversation surrounding it. You know, it's going to be one of those movies where you're like, I don't know if this made sense. Or you watch it on a plane. You know, but is it essential cinema? No. And did it really sort of like make the case for Olivia Wilde as a, you know, like force to be reckoned with? No.
All right. Well, here I go to see it now because I have to be involved and people are going to come up and talk to us about this movie for at least another 4 months. So I don't want to be blowing smoke.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely going to be in the Oscar race.
but for what? Yeah.
Honestly, it might get a Golden Globe nom.
Oh, no. If ever a movie ended up at the Golden Globes, it is Don't Worry, Darling. Is there an original song they can toast or something? You know what I mean?
No, but Harry Styles does do a very weird, like, dance in the film that is out of nowhere, and it's very I Got No Strings on Me.
Okay.
So,
and by the way, we are inundated with Pinocchio culture at the moment, so I don't know if I appreciate that.
Honestly, it's a little bit Pinocchio allegory too, you know. It reminds me of the, like, you know, the boys turning into like donkeys, that creepy part, you know. Like, I will actually say the end of the movie is thrilling. Doesn't make a lot of sense, but it is thrilling in a madcap Austin Powers sort of way.
Ooh, a name I did not expect to hear in this conversation, and God, we've missed him.
Yeah.
So, speaking of legitimate Britishness.
So, yeah, I think, you know, we'll probably have an addendum to the Don't Worry, Darling press tour drama, because who doesn't love on-set drama that is then revisited during an awards circuit?
Yes. Oh, please. Yes.
Bringing everybody back together. Come on.
Right. Tell it to Terry Gross now. Yeah.
All right. Well, we're back. We talked to Nick Kroll about this film, but also his new Netflix special, Little Big Boy, and more. We'll be right back.
Are you concerned about microplastics in your home? Blue Land makes it easy to make sustainable choices. Blue Land cleaning sprays, toilet bowl cleaner, and dishwasher and laundry detergent tablets are free from dyes, parabens, and harsh chemicals. Blue Land is a certified B Corp and Leaping Bunny cruelty-free certified. Their formulas are EPA Safer Choice certified, and many products have also earned Cradle to Cradle's Gold Material Health Certificate. Get 15% off your first order by going to blueland.com/crooked. blueland.com/crooked.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
All right, you know him from Troll Show, The League, Big Mouth, his latest film, Don't Worry, Darling, which is out now in theaters, and also his new Netflix special, Little Big Boy, which is out now as well. We are delighted to welcome to Keep It, Nick Kroll.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
Your special is out literally now as we are recording this.
It came out as we were recording this. It came out, and it feels so much more free and more who it's always wanted to be. And
good for it. It's
family is going to have to just learn to deal with it, honestly. And over time, they'll learn to accept it and hopefully embrace it. And if they don't, then that's on them.
Promoting comedy to me, or a comedy special, is difficult because it's just you're telling jokes, which is what you're already doing here. So do you develop strategies for promoting various comedy specials? Like, oh, but this time it's going to be like this.
Well, it's weird because, like, you know, when you do like talk shows for movies or TV or whatever, they always are like, do you have some stand-ups? And like basically being like, and do you have really good material that you want to burn on our show? And for years, I've basically been like, yeah, no, I just like, you know, look at my Instagram and figure out if there's something funny that I can say about a picture. Because it's like you want to save that material. You don't want to burn that material on like a talk show panel. And it was all ultimately towards getting like having fresh material to have for a special. And so now the special's out. And so now the question is what we're doing here material? I guess, right. am I burning the next hour here on the podcast? But it's this funny thing of like, as you go, it's like you spend, or at least I spent so long, like trying to be like the, you know, as funny as I can be always. But then I slowly have gotten like weirdly more genuine, and the special itself is sort of a little more like vulnerable and revelatory. It's autobiographical in a way that I haven't done other stuff. And so I think as I've gotten older, I've just become more like kind of like, oh, here's what I'm actually feeling right now. And which means it's not always funny. And then I'll try to be funny. And then it's like, we're ready to transition from a vulnerable Nikki into a very serious Nikki into comedy Nikki. So that's what I just had to say.
I feel like the vulnerability angle is inevitable given after you do so many characters for a certain amount of time, you just want to rest a little bit. Like, what if I just had a sincere moment where I talked to you and, you know, said something earnest? Like, it's easier. Ultimately, you're giving yourself a break by being vulnerable.
It is. It's also just like, my wife Lily and I, you know, we were talking about it like about, it's now like 3 or 4 years ago, where she's like, why haven't you done a special yet? And I was like, that's for like Mulaney, that's for Ali Wong, that's for like my friends who are like stand-ups. And part of that was I had done a lot of characters, and my stand-up was sort of character driven. But it felt like both because of Big Mouth, which is obviously like big jokes and I play a lot of different characters, but it's ultimately very honest and and autobiographical about where I was as a kid and ultimately where I still am. And I think I was pretty rewarded for being more honest and saw the benefits of that. And so it was like in this hour, it was like, well, I think I'm going to focus on that. And you know, when you find a partner, in my case, I think my being in a relationship with someone who really values, like, let's get into this and really be honest about where we are. It infused what I wanted to talk about on stage. And, you know, ultimately it's all still jokes, but I was like, I think I want to be like, let's see what this is like, where I am in my life. And hopefully audiences will not reject it.
Speaking of Big Mouth, you know, you have this long-running series, you know, which is beloved by, you know, like older people, younger people. So you've been producing a show for a while, but talking about vulnerability in comedy, it reminds me, I guess, a bit of what's popular now. If you look at like a Ted Lasso or an Abbott Elementary, like these are shows that are winning the awards now and people are talking about them, and they are much more vulnerable, I would say, than
hard on the
sitcoms.
Sleeve, yeah.
Yeah, you know, more than sitcoms, you know, than like a Seinfeld, you know, like a Happy Endings. Like they're not as hard. Do you feel that comedy has shifted this way amongst you and, you know, like your other friends who make comedy, or is this just what's popular now?
I think it really is dependent on the show, but I think culturally, especially after the last few years, you know, it's been a tough couple of years. And so I think shows like, you know, like Ted Lasso or Abbott, to me, very different from one another, but there is something that I think people were drawn to about it. I think audiences were a little tired of like sad comedies. Or harder, bigger, like little, you know, ones that aren't necessarily feelings driven. You know, the truth is, and the real luxury of my career is that I kind of get to scratch a bunch of different surfaces that I get to, you know, Big Mouth is very vulnerable, but it's some big, hard, crazy jokes that are like super intense for some people. But also big feelings. And that's sort of what I feel like the through line that my career goes on, that I'm trying to, that is the through line for me, is like big feelings, big laughs. Like, I don't think I want to sacrifice either, but with the beauty of my career is that I get to do, depending on the project, different versions of it, you know, like to be able to be very sort of sweet and vulnerable and emotional. And then also do things that are incredible. Like, you know, I get to be on like What We Do in the Shadows and like a show that is pure jokes, that isn't like super feelings driven, and many things in between. And that's a real, I feel the luxury of that, you know.
Speaking of big emotions and big laughs, the Don't Worry Darling press tour. Did you ever know or guess that you would be basically like the statesman of this movie? Like, I'm looking at you now and I'm like, here's like the sort of refined diplomat of this whole movie. I mean, like, I guess you're now in the middle of promoting it, but what's it been like just talking about this movie? Because as I'm sure several thousand people have said to you by this point, I can't think of a movie that has made this kind of impression in recent memory. I'm literally thinking of like Ingrid Bergman in Stromboli or something, where people were in a furor about what was happening.
Yeah. I mean, it always, my name and Ingrid Bergman's name are always coming up.
Getting uttered. Yeah.
I mean, it's been, I knew when I, you know, when I got the call from Olivia, in like, it was probably like September 2020, we were in the thick of the lockdown, and I got a call being like, hey, do you want to be like my husband in this movie? And, you know, I'd seen the trades of like Harry Styles and Florence Pugh and all that stuff, and I was like, that sounds so fun. I mean, it was an intense thing shooting in the middle of COVID, but I was like, well, this will be fun and it feels like splashy and people will know about it. Little did we know what it would be. And, you know, I can now say, you know, when the movie you know, it's a thriller. The less you know about the movie itself, the better. And that's how I planned the whole press tour. I'm sort of the puppeteer, the Svengali of it all. I orchestrated all the drama so that people would be talking about the movie, but not the movie itself. So, you know, I was like, Harry, you should go spit on Chris right now. And then, I was like, and then now you can spit in my mouth. And and he just gave me a closed mouth kiss. But whatever, you can't give him too much direction. You got to let him do his thing. It was so crazy. But for me, I really loved making the movie, and I loved working with everyone on the movie. So it was, for me, it was a very easy, fun. I mean, it was insane. Like, because I've never been a part of something that's felt like the entire world was kind of watching. It was like, it felt like that weekend in Venice. It was like, oh, it was a boring weekend in this. It felt like a boring weekend in the States, where it was like, oh, Serena didn't make it to the finals of the US Open. So like, there's nothing else to watch. So like, let's watch this. And for me, it was really fun. Like, I was like, what a trip to be at Venice. It was so exciting to see all these people that I'd worked with, who I really liked working with. And it felt like they were happy to see me. And so it was a blast. I don't know. I mean, I can't speak for everyone else, but it was, I had a blast.
Did you find that your actual friends, you know, like, were more into texting you and asking what was going on? Or have you been more like, you know,
yeah,
a person that people want to talk to at a party lately now? Just because I feel like we were bored in America. And when I tell you that every single text chain that I had amongst a friend, even people who don't even pay attention to things, were talking about this movie. And then they actually went to see it too, which is shocking. Yeah.
No, I mean, it did well. It's the number one movie in America. And that is nice, because out of all of this and like all the intensity and all the, you know, it would have been a super bummer if the movie came out and nobody went and saw it. But people are seeing it, and I think people are enjoying it in a way that, like, you know, critically it didn't get great reviews. I think that's all tied into the drama, frankly. But people went and saw it, and I hope people continue to see, because I think it's a really fun, really fun movie going experience. I did get texts from a lot of people. Like, I had I got married and had a baby, and then people reached out to congratulate me. And then I had a massive allergic reaction, and I posted pictures of it. And I got a lot of incoming on that. And then I went to Venice for the premiere of Don't Worry, Darling, and I got even more incoming on that. So I don't know what that says about my friends. but it did feel like I could feel the palpable kind of interest in it, you know, and it was a real trip.
I think one of the wildest jumps in the past 7 years I've had while watching a movie is when you appeared in the movie Loving, which just nothing about that movie indicated Nick Kroll was coming. And now that we have Don't Worry, Darling, it's like, okay, now you're building sort of a film. Like, you're in the movie Knight of Cups too. Like, your drama choices are whack. It's just like, I'm shocked by what you've chosen, and yet also elated, because I would never guess that you would care to be in movies like that. And I was wondering, God, do that fulfill some sort of impulse for you?
I love it. I mean, I like doing all types of things. And especially, I mean, so much of it is working with cool people. And I'm like, whether it's like Terrence Malick and Knight of Cups. I mean, I had a crazy, I'm in the movie for all 15 seconds, but my job, Terrence Malick was like, your job is, you are a torpedo. You are here to disrupt. And so my job for a day or two was to poke Christian Bale. Literally, that was my job. I was there to just incite Christian Bale, and it was very fun. And Loving, you know, Jeff Nichols, who made that film, is one of my favorite filmmakers, and working with Ruth and Joel and everyone in that cast. It was I like doing everything. Like, I, you know, like every comedian, like, you quiet, we all quietly like want to show everybody that we can act, and it makes everything more fun the more that you get to kind of jump into different things. And in this case, I, you know, went from, you know, shooting something like Don't Worry, Darling, which is, I'd never been in a thriller before. And I loved Booksmart. I thought Olivia I think she's a really, really talented filmmaker. And so it was very fun to do that. And then And then go back to, you know, doing Big Mouth and then going on the road to do stand up and going and, you know, taping the special and stuff. And I just feel like the more I get to do different things, the more I get to enjoy each of the things that I have the real privilege of doing. And I think because I've done enough of them now, people will, you know, place me in something there where you're not quite expecting someone like me to be. Mm. I mean, I think like as far as being in Don't Worry, Darling with, you know, Gemma and Harry and Kiki and Florence and Olivia. I mean, these are all some of the most beautiful people in the world. Chris Pine. It makes perfect sense that I would then be alongside of them.
Duh. You know, yes.
As Mad Magazine's what sexiest people.
when you are picking, you know, other artists to work with, to be in, you know, like Big Mouth or like Human Resources, mm-hmm. you know, like, mm-hmm. what do you look for in someone who is going to be, you know, acting mostly with their voice, you know, mm. like.
Interesting. You know, I mean, so much of Big Mouth was cast is our friends of mine, you know, like Jesse Klein, I have known forever, and Mulaney and Jason Mantzoukas, I've known Mulaney since college, Jason early days at UCB. You know, obviously Fred Armisen and Maya, I knew a little later, but have known for quite some time. Jordan Peele, like, you know, it's an insane cast of people who are my friends, who I also believe to be the most talented people. When we did Human Resources, we expanded that out a little more, and some of whom we brought in earlier, you know, inside of Big Mouth to introduce them, like Kiki Palmer, who you're just looking for people whose voices pop in a way that, and some of them ended up being some of the biggest like stars in the world. And you understand once you then hear them on the show, whether it's like Hugh Jackman comes in and plays an addiction angel and it's against type for him, but it's just his voice just pops. There's an energy to it. There's a and then there's people like Brandon Kyle Goodman, who was a writer for many years on Big Mouth, and they just came in to be to they were doing a voice, you know, where they would read through it in the room. You know, like we always have our writers reading through it as we're, you know, writing the scripts, and they were just so talented that it ultimately was like, well, let's not, why are we going to chase someone else when we have such a talented voice right here? And they, you know, they pop on air. It's just like certain voices just pop.
I love Brandon. Brandon's a very close friend. And also, you know, you did steal our co-host from us too for a bit, Aida.
Yes.
And then Issa Rae stole her too. So,
you know, it's a food chain. It's a food pyramid. And that's how it works. And I think very fortunate to, and I credit our producing team, of spotting talent early on, whether, you know, as we've continued to grow the show, we've tried to, you know, get younger, different voices in the room, whether it's like, you know, we had Jabuki Young White for a year before he got the Daily Show, and Joel Kim Booster was, you know, joined us for as long as he could, Aida, Brandon Kyle Goodman, Caleb Heron is been a writer on the show now for a number of years. And in addition to the cast that the writers, you know, it is so much of it. If you can build homegrown talent that then, you know, get to also appear on the show, and the better off you are. It's like, you just kind of create this as big a bullpen as possible. And some of them stick around, some of them get different opportunities, and you just try to create an environment where people feel, as, and you guys know, and I know, like, you know, Lewis is as a writer, but then also as a talent, like you people have aspirations to do more than just write. And oftentimes those people also are super talented performers, and you want to create an environment where they get to do all that.
When I look through your Wikipedia, everything, Kroll Show on down, it's such a constant barrage of different types of characters, performances, etc. When have you been the most out of ideas, and what did you do to regain them?
I think it was really, It was at the end of Kroll Show. We had done three seasons, and I had was simultaneously doing The League. And so there was like between the pilot of Kroll Show, there was about 4 years where I was either writing and editing or shooting Kroll Show or shooting The League. And I made an indie film in there called Adult Beginners with Rose Byrne and Cannavale in the middle of that. And I got to the end of whatever we were shooting, season three of Kroll Show, and I was just done. I was just cooked. Like, I was physically exhausted, and I was creatively felt pretty sapped. And I kind of was like, I knew in my head when we were finishing season three of Kroll Show that I was done. And we ended it, and I just needed a reset. And at that point, Mulaney had just finished the hit show Mulaney. And
Nassim Pedrad, yes, I remember.
Yes, I remember going out to dinner, and we were both sort of sitting there, and we started joking about doing like an Oh Hello Show, and we didn't even know what it was, but we were like, well, let's do that. Like, let's go back to where we kind of started, which was these two characters on stage, and just like bring the stakes way down, just go back to something that felt really fun. And then Andrew Goldberg, my best friend from childhood, came to me with Mark Levin and Jen Flackett, who he had known for a long time. And they brought me this show, an animated idea for a show about Andrew and I going through puberty. And that felt like such an immediate, like, yes. And so it was like, you know, resetting the clock, letting myself start over, clean the slate. And from that moment came what became the Oh Hello Show on Broadway and Big Mouth. And that sort of has now been, as well as other things, but that sort of reset everything. And in that time, I also, I pulled back a little bit from The League, which allowed me to go do Loving, and then other things that sort of came after that. So it was really kind of resetting everything and clearing the table a little bit, and then starting fresh. But that was the last time I felt like truly like sapped. It was very good. I think there's something really healthy about like kind of restarting every once in a while.
Well, yeah. I mean, like, you know, not to bring up another traumatic press moment from your life, you know, but you did sort of like become part of the public consciousness in that very popular ABC show.
Caveman.
And what does that feel like now in retrospect? Being on a network show back when also like people were still really watching network shows.
Paying attention to network shows. And, yes.
But now,
they weren't watching that one.
Yeah. But what's funny is even being canceled, I have to imagine more people watched the premiere of Caveman than watch some of the most popular shows on TV now.
Yes. I mean, I think it was a great, I'm very fortunate that was my first show, one, because I was in 4 hours of makeup every morning, and I didn't know what a nightmare it was yet, because I had nothing to compare it to. You know, I'd never acted on television. Mm-hmm. Like, I'd never acted on a TV show before, so I didn't know that like 90 hour work weeks and 4 hours of prosthetics every morning and getting like hair glued to my arms and legs anytime my skin was exposed was going to be an unpleasant experience. But I learned a lot about acting and how to work with people. And then the show came out, and we, like, you know, we went to the TCAs, and I don't know if you guys have been through those things, but you know, it's all the critics and you have a panel, and what they were preparing us for was like, all right, so guys, just be prepared. Like, everyone's going to ask, like, is this a show? Is this about Geico? And then we got up on stage and they're like, your show is racist. And it was like, oh my God, we were not ready for that. But it did prepare me slightly for it. It was a great primer for, like, you just never know what's going to happen. You don't know how things are going to be received. You don't know how things are going to, you know, you don't know what the process is going to be like. You don't know how hard a show is going to be to make. And it was a really good, for me, it was a really good first thing to do. And so when other things in my career have come up that have either stirred controversy or have gotten attention and not well received or whatever it was, it's like having gone through that, even though I already was like, I was like 29, like, mm-hmm. I was like 28, 29. So I wasn't like a baby, So I think I was even then was ready. So now when something like Don't Worry, Darling comes out and there's all this sort of controversy, drama, hoopla around it, like, I feel very fortunate that I'm like an adult, that I'm like in a position where I'm like, oh, this is crazy. But also, like, you know, I feel prepared on some level for whatever this is, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much for being here. I mean, it's such a pleasure seeing you do whatever you do. And your new special is mm-hmm. fabulous. And this Don't Worry, Darling moment has been so zany. And I thank you for, in any way, how you've contributed to it.
My small contribution to it.
Yes.
Thank you.
The morsel you threw in. Yeah. Yes.
Thank you. But no, I feel really... The combination of something like Don't Worry, Darling come out that I'm obviously not a small part of, but was very, very lucky to be a part of. And then my stand-up special, which feels so wholly something that I feel responsible for. I hope people check it out on Netflix. It's streaming right now, and I'm very proud of it. And I hope people watch it and get to see something maybe from me that they haven't entirely seen yet. So, that's about it.
But I just want to say, if people were paying attention to you ever at all, even mm-hmm. just in the characters, any interview you've done, I mean, there's always been a sincerity there. So don't sell yourself short on that front either.
Thank you. Thank you. Go back and watch the Caveman Press Tour. Not
okay,
a lot of
I'll
sincerity
see.
There. Go back to that.
I will.
Go see if you can find some footage from that.
I just looked up the numbers too. And like the final episodes of Caveman were averaging like 5 million people a week still.
Isn't that Jesus. Crazy? That would yeah. be a hit. That would be a hit right now. We were preempted for the Charlie Brown Thanksgiving special. The week of Thanksgiving, I knew we were in trouble the following week when we were preempted for the Charlie Brown Thanksgiving special.
Wow. Yeah. Linus coming in ahead of you. Yeah.
Oh my God. Linus was testing very well. Thank you guys for having me. I'm a fan and happy to be here. So I appreciate it.
Yeah,
thanks so much,
thank you, Nick.
All right, guys. Take care. Thanks so much.
Don't Worry, Darling is out now in theaters and Little Big Boy is streaming on Netflix.
Are you concerned about microplastics in your home? Blue Land makes it easy to make sustainable choices. Blue Land cleaning sprays, toilet bowl cleaner, and dishwasher and laundry detergent tablets are free from dyes, parabens, and harsh chemicals. Blue Land is a certified B Corp and Leaping Bunny cruelty-free certified. Their formulas are EPA Safer Choice certified, and many products have also earned Cradle to Cradle's Gold Material Health Certificate. Get 15% off your first order by going to blueland.com/crooked. blueland.com/crooked.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
If you're wondering why all your friends were sharing a picture of a football to their Instagram stories over the weekend, the answer is that Rihanna is performing at the halftime show at the Super Bowl in February. This will allegedly end the music drought from Rihanna, who hasn't released an album since Anti, and was kidnapped by DJ Khaled and forced to release the song Wild Thoughts. And like
is that her last song?
I think it might be. Let me look this up.
The sample in that song is so funny. I'm sorry, Maria Maria, just as a reference point. I mean, I actually thought the song was okay, but Maria Maria as a reference point is just, you know, Abercrombie 2000s culture in a major way.
You know what? Yes, because it came after Lemon. The NERD song in 2017. She has a song that she features on from Party Next Door in 2020, but no one's thinking about that song. Wild Thoughts is a moment. It was a moment,
yeah, it was
to
fine.
Be honest. And I love that Maria Maria sample too. It's so hilarious.
Yes. Yeah, it's a funny song. Also, you're right. A song that you heard all the time at the time and never since.
Yeah.
Again, I believe there should be a German word for that. Again, I'm going to call it the despacitography. That's what I'm going to call it.
Those are the songs that you hear at Ira's parties.
Yes, precisely.
I'm always throwing on wild thoughts. But anyway, she was last on stage at the 2018 Grammys. And so this is Rihanna's return to remembering she's a singer.
Right, which she has more amnesia than all your faves on Days of Our Lives. I mean, she simply needs to be brought to her attention. How do you think this even came about? Like, obviously, Taylor Swift turned down the Super Bowl halftime show.
Well,
but then minutes later, Rihanna took it. Does that mean they went to Rihanna and she's like, oh, that's a good idea, which seems crazy? Or did she say, it's my turn to come back, maybe I'll take the Super Bowl halftime show?
Well, there were new reports that it was never offered to Taylor Swift and that the Roc Nation and Jay-Z were always planning to give it to Rihanna, which then means that if she was second on the list, it's alleged that she was second on the list after Rihanna, if Rihanna did turn it down, and that maybe Taylor's team like leaked that info that she was in talks just to be a part of the conversation.
Oh, I see.
You know, because it seems wild that it was Taylor is in talks to do the Super Bowl. And then like truly same day within 24 hours, Rihanna is announced. And then we've got all the graphics ready to go.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, that is a great point. The graphics were right there.
Like,
yeah, there was not a hiccup.
No one whipped that up in 5 seconds. So.
No.
Yeah.
With approvals from her team, please.
Yeah, something's,
they take a while.
Something's rotten in the state of Arizona, where the Super Bowl will be.
Nice pull. I don't know if I would have known that. What's interesting, though, is like, I would say like Rihanna's super fans, the best of what they consider her music, probably wouldn't necessarily be the huge singles. And because the Super Bowl halftime show sort of reduces people to their hugest moments, I almost feel like you can predict the entire show, unfortunately.
Yeah, and, you know, Billboard tried to do that, and it was disastrous.
What did they guess?
Early keep it to Billboard's dream set list for Rihanna's Super Bowl, which is Don't Stop the Music /SOS.
To start?
Yes. To S&M. Rude Boy, a moment with three ballads back to back with Love on the Brain, then Stay, then Diamonds. Like, what are we doing here, girl?
No, just do Diamonds.
And then Need It Me, followed by someone at Billboard actually had the nerve to write Eminem medley with The Monster and Love the Way You Lie. We don't need Eminem on stage in 2023 at the Super Bowl. Wasn't he just there last year?
But by the way, you know, I feel like that could happen. Yeah. Wasn't he there recently with like Mary J. Blige and that weird house they built?
Yeah. They're still living in it.
It was like a Sims house. Yeah. Right.
Eminem can wait.
Oh, God.
Followed by Jay-Z medley featuring Talk That Talk, Run This Town, and Umbrella. And I don't see Rihanna doing back-to-back medleys with Eminem and Jay-Z, but okay, Billboard. Followed by an R9 track, because they assume she's going to debut a new song at the Super Bowl, which, wishful thinking.
Yeah, love the spirit.
Ending with We Found Love. What a wild playlist.
I'm trying to think if there's other things I would like. What's My Name not on there?
What's My Name's not on there. Only Girl in the World is not on here. And also,
that feels essential.
I feel like there's no way she does
SOS.
That was the opener, remember?
Right, with Don't Stop the Music.
Yeah. But I feel like there's no way she takes the Super Bowl stage and doesn't do a bit of Rockstar 101. At least if singing
there has
the
to
chorus.
Be a stomp moment. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I feel like it's predictable with the big hits, but also I feel like, you know, she's going to switch it up a bit.
God, I hope so. I mean, also, choreography-wise, I'm curious what she'll do.
Mm-hmm.
Just because it's been forever since we've seen her break it down that way. I am still mesmerized by that old, it's like a Vogue award show where she performs Vogue.
Mm-hmm.
What Rihanna was that? That feels like 50 stages ago.
Yeah.
But anyway, she did a whole version of Madonna's Vogue, and I just didn't know she cared. It was a good moment.
It's been really fun to see her evolution as an artist, and it'll be nice to see her come back. And it's interesting because I'm like, whether or not we even get new music, it'll just be nice to, you know, like see what she is planning to deliver. And I think it's, you know, it's, I enjoy seeing Rihanna perform. I love the Anti tour, you know. Mm-hmm. I saw the Anti tour. I saw the Only Girl in the World tour. The Anti tour was better. Only Girl in the World, she was still fumbling around stage, much like a football.
Yeah. You really understand this sport and where it is performed.
Okay. I know that Brett Favre swindled people out of millions somewhere.
Oh my God. That story. They keep adding figures to that. It keeps being like, oh, actually it was 80 million. Oh, actually it was 90.
And aren't you just so disappointed that like his wife, Deanna, isn't currently on a Real Housewives franchise? Because I would love this.
Yeah, right. We could be getting into the nitty gritty of it. Which Super Bowl halftime show do you find yourself watching the most recently? Because as you all know in Keep It Land, among YouTube videos that our friends watch before we all go out on a Friday or a Saturday, Super Bowl halftime shows are probably, it's competitive with Drag Race lip sync performances for what we watch the most of.
Gay men of our age love that because you know what it is? It's basically, that's why the Taylor stands were excited at first because it's basically a mini concert you could put on at a pregame or an afters and just like leave it there.
Right.
You know?
And it's not actually the full concert. Mm-hmm. You know, at my birthday, I'll leave on the Confessions tour and that's, I believe 7 hours long. So you need to move on.
Yeah. You know, well, you know, the Disco Inferno is one of my favorite Madonna mixes ever.
Oh yeah. With, Erotica. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of Madonna.
Erotica, Music Inferno. Yes.
Speaking of Madonna, I just want to side note that, I was at the Eagle on Saturday with Jeremy O'Harris and Baz Luhrmann. And
what?
Very random. And to hear him discuss M, Madonna.
Oh, my God.
And Baz Luhrmann gave his idea, his like his thoughts on, you know, success in a career. And it is saying yes, even when you didn't want to, you know? And he said that he wishes he had said yes more in his career than not to, like, criticism. And he thinks that that is one of Madonna's problems.
That she agrees with criticism?
No, disagrees with it. She won't accept criticism.
Got it. Oh, yeah, she's very constitutionally opposed to most criticism.
Yeah.
Even though I feel I can hear her in an interview being like, no. If I like where they're coming from, if I understand that they're this, I can hear her saying she's an artist and understands how art works, whatever. But the ego is so strong. And I say that appreciatively.
Of course.
I mean, I think that's the thing that's guided her this entire time. But right. Interesting note from Baz.
Yeah. I mean, interesting to hear that he's wishes that he had said yes to criticism before in his life, too. I wish you had for Australia.
Would that criticism be like, yeah.
Don't make
that criticism be, I'm having a seizure at your movie, Baz. Can you tone it down?
But honestly, I fucking love Elvis.
I think it's in my top three of his. I just thought it was ultimately a flashy Wikipedia movie.
Mm-hmm. I just feel like every frame, there's something wild and insane, and I love revisiting it.
And of course, I've said this before, Elizabeth Debicki and The Great Gatsby. Love that performance.
Mm, yeah. So, you know what? He did what he needed to do. And of course, The Great Gatsby has a fantastic soundtrack, you know, produced by Jay-Z, yes, who is producing the Super Bowl. Look how I brought it back.
We've been real like, let's just go all over the place this episode. There wasn't that much pop culture this week. I don't know what to tell you people.
It truly wasn't. And I'm you know, to get back to Rihanna, there's hopes that she'll be releasing new music around now, but like, I'm not gonna count on it. Okay? I mean, Beyonce gave us an album and then said goodbye.
Right.
No videos.
She's like, guess what? I won't be doing promoting it. Yeah.
There'll be no visuals to this yet, even though Act 2 is allegedly coming soon. The songs were registered at the ASCPA, so we at least know that it exists.
Okay, right. That's true. Yes, that was, and by the way, whoever did that detective work and then immediately posted it online, thank you.
Yeah.
Because those are the internet people we need.
But I don't know. I would love a new Rihanna. I would love to know what Rihanna is feeling in this era. You know, I think she's essential. That's about it.
Yeah, there's no second one of her. Mm-hmm. Not been played, and which always feels kind of mind-boggling in that, you know, she came on with Ponda Replay and these like perfectly listenable radio hits, and then evolved into something resembling just so serious and so rad. I mean, again, like the epitome of rad, which is the one of four adjectives I know.
There's been this recent conversation online too about the fact that Rihanna used to be, you know, sort of like nasty and rude online, you know, and it's funny that era, she's moved past it now. She's a businesswoman. She's mother, you know.
But she still does follow those housewives. Like, she has particular taste in petty housewives, mm-hmm. which is where she uses that energy.
Yeah. I hope that, you know, I can just, you know, evolve into that someday. You know, just following the housewives, selling makeup.
Yeah.
And my Twitter
keeping
days are
shut.
Long behind.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Your lips to God's ears. We all praying.
Well, can't keep my mouth shut. Yeah, we gotta keep doing this every week.
That's true, right? Yeah.
But anyway, go football.
I love it.
Yeah.
Actually, among sports, I hate it. I do not understand the drama of the game at all. I don't want you to throw shit, and I don't want that guy to catch it either.
Rank sports. I feel like football's entertaining to watch more so than baseball.
I totally don't baseball, agree.
Again, well, I baseball I hate on TV. It's more entertaining in person, but it's also still very long.
I honestly feel that golf is more entertaining than both of those. Let me tell you why. Because like everything is a serve. You know, like here comes this whatever chip off the fringe. Oh, it's near the hole now. Well, did you see that? You know, it's like you get to be a little bitch every time you do anything. Oh, I'm in the sand trap now. Now I'm not. Mm. You know,
how do you feel about froth?
Something about frisbee is both alpha and incel, so I don't like that.
The frisbee has endured for quite some time, hasn't it?
Right. Well, dogs stay jumping. Who am I?
When's the last time you played frisbee?
I was a good ultimate frisbee player in high school.
Okay.
We would play that in gym class. Again, badminton is what I want to be the gay intramural sport. Because you can make your gay little faggot tennis noises. And then you get to swing a racket really hard. I know it's sort of happening for pickleball. And actually, online wouldn't shut up about that last week. But pickleball is still ultimately a little slow.
And you get to plot murder while playing badminton.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I've got plenty more to say about pickleball. Just you
wait.
Oh,
Jesus.
So... when we're back, keep it. And we are back with our favorite segment of the episode. It's Keep It. Lewis, you already teased it in the episode, so... I know what your keep it is.
Yes. My keep it, this isn't utterly uniform. There are things I like about the list, but is mainly to Rolling Stone's 100 Greatest TV Show list for this reason. First of all, when you go to the list online, I've never seen this done before. You scroll to the bottom and you think you're reading the number one, but it's actually an ad. And when I was reading it, it said number one, The Good Fight. And I about jumped into the ceiling. I said, The Good Fight is the greatest TV show of all time. You're saying Audrey McDonald is the world's greatest television star who ever lived? I want to be clear. I Love Lucy is beneath this. Anyway, that disappears. It's an ad. That's The Good Fight.
I don't know why you number had to come for Audrey McDonald like that.
Ricky and the Flash star, Audrey McDonald? I don't know. The number one is The Sopranos. Okay, great. Number two is The Simpsons. Number three is Breaking Bad. Number four is The Wire. I would love to congratulate men for all they have given television. Thank you so much. My problem is, I think the people that are the most passionate about ranking things tend to be men. And they specifically, in terms of TV fandom, know what they consider to be the best of all time. And they love trumpeting that. They love saying it's The Sopranos. They love saying it's The Wire. They love saying it's Mad Men, Breaking Bad, whatever. And then they phone in the more distaff offerings of television and sort of just put them wherever they want in the list to make it seem like it's a balanced list. And so suddenly Fleabag is number five. I want to be clear that Fleabag has about four episodes and is lovely and is very good, but is not better than, say, I Love Lucy or even Mary Tyler Moore, which is like a few notches down on the list. It to me feels like they have their shows that they're obsessed with, which are male led, generally speaking. And then the recency bias dictates what female led offerings get considered great or the greatest of all time. And then the things that we actually do care about that were women-led, like Sex and the City, are pushed way the fuck down the list because people can't just admit that Sex and the City was amazing. It is number 79 on the list.
Yeah, you know, it's the recency stuff is wild because Succession is like number 11, and you know I'm Succession Hive, but what? It's still on.
No, of all time.
It's still on. Right.
And plenty can still go wrong, et cetera. Yes.
Yeah. And, you know, you've got Game of Thrones at 31 over The Office, which seems interesting. I would put The Office actually higher than Game of Thrones.
I would too.
The placement of certain things is just very weird, but that's also what these lists are for, right?
I get that you're supposed to be upset. But guess what? I'm upset.
I am upset. Where's Desperate Housewives?
Is it not on the list at all? As far as I can tell, it's not here. Unless they spelled it Cheers. like Atlanta at number nine. Is that sincere?
Atlanta is at number nine because of the reason The Wire is at number three. And it's, white people love to tell you to watch The Wire. And I love to tell you that they love Atlanta. And I'm not saying these shows aren't good, but it is a barometer that, like, when you ask a white person to name a black TV show that they love, it's Atlanta. There are actually plenty of others I would put above it, you know? But Everybody Hates Chris, for example. 227.
I might put In Living Color way higher than wherever it is on this
list.
There's
always a lack of interest in television shows that queer people would like, women, you know, like black people, other people of color. You know, it's very much the white men who've been reviewing television and telling us what's amazing are the people who are deciding things still, you know, and it's not Alan Sepinwall, because I adore Alan Sepinwall's writing. He's fucking fantastic. But it's from a long tradition of what's been decided. It's great. I agree with The Sopranos being very high. I fucking love The Sopranos, you know? But there's always this sort of, you'd better say Sopranos is the best TV show ever. Otherwise, you know, you'll get shot.
Right.
Whereas
it's wherever.
I think you can't do that with film so much anymore or music, you know? It's like there's room for everyone.
Sopranos, I feel, yes, that's right. Sopranos, I've only seen like a season and a half of it. I did not understand that Nancy Marchand on that show, who was an Emmy-winning veteran from Lou Grant, who plays Tony Soprano's mom, was fucking amazing on that show. Legendary performance. Wish more people talked about that.
You got to watch more than one and a half seasons. I don't know if you need to at this point.
That's just it. I mean, like, I just have to carve out a block where I'm like, on vacation in some place where I don't want to go outside. Like, what are even the circumstances where this would happen? But anyway, it's a list that'll make you upset and also happy, as lists are supposed to do. So that's my keep it this week. Ira, what is your keep it?
My keep it goes to this game that has white gay men in New York City in a chokehold. It's called pickleball.
Is that sport choking?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
pickleball.
No, I love choking. It's one of my favorite sports. Right. Call me Homer
Simpson.
That's for any
race.
Okay. I love to choke, and I'm Bart. I love to be choked.
Moving on.
I love the book Choke. Okay.
Okay.
From
wow,
Chuck Palahniuk.
Dictionary definitions of the word choke here. Yes, I'm familiar.
I'm revealing a lot about myself this week. But pickleball.
Well, after that vulnerability talk with Nick, I understand. Yeah.
Pickleball. Maybe it's actually just a sign I know too many white people.
That could be.
Because what do I know about pickleball? What do I know about it?
It's just one of those things where I guess there was an era where people didn't play it. I grew up playing it in gym class, but to me, it's just not amazing. It's like a B minus sport, and now it's like taken over. You know, I would prefer we stick with dodgeball to make sure gay anger is represented as opposed to the light wooden tapping of a wiffle ball.
I was just, is there a pickle in it?
There sure isn't.
There's no pickles. Like when you play, do you ever feel like, oh, wow, I'm really in a pickle now?
People often turn to an imaginary camera and they say, I'm in a pickle now, when the volley's on the other side. Yeah.
I do that daily.
You act like Clarissa.
My life is constantly a caper. I did also realize that it was like old, like from the 60s. When it was first invented.
Oh, yeah.
Because I never played it as a kid, you know? I played basketball on the streets of Harlem.
Would love to see it.
Yeah, you know what I got? Game.
Go ahead. I bet you don't. All right.
I've got the board game.
You
sorry.
Got Looney Tunes B-Ball on SNES. Yeah, right. I want to say congratulations to Taylor on fucking
Taylor fucking Hale.
Oh, my God. Could you believe, first of all, the finale speech alone.
Best speech in Big Brother history.
Okay, it was a great speech, and everybody agrees it was a great speech. It was also very bold.
It was.
Like, it was her saying, I actually, the whole narrative is about me. So you have to believe that. Like, that was some trickery, you know, in addition to being, she made points, etc. But, woof, we rarely get a victory where everybody feels exhilarated, like a sort of post-sex relief kind of thrill, and she just seems so fucking cool in general. Let's get her on the show. She should be on the show.
I think someone tweeted at me that she listens to Keep It, so please get her on.
Which means she's dumber than she looks, because why is she listening to the show?
She could be our co-host.
I would love that. But yeah, all right, great.
No, she's so amazing, and it's so interesting too, because like to win Big Brother, you have to get to the end, obviously, and then you have to convince the people who you kicked out of the house to vote for you. And she had some Dr. Will going on, you know?
Yeah,
like,
no.
Every person who won targeted her, went out the next week, and she was on the block so many times and was constantly removed from the block. Everyone in the jury house, except for Turner, basically went in campaigning for her to win.
Yes. Right. Like all the light in the room bent towards her eventually.
That is mind missed. And it's just really beautiful. And honestly, like, shout out to our Andy Heron-esque king, Michael, who could have very well won too.
Yes. Because he was a fabulous player. He's a,
you know, it was fun seeing just sort of like a overtly gay man on a reality show like that also be a comp beast, because we usually see it on Survivor with like the Tysons, you know, like those kind of people, like just winning competition after competition, and it's like as soon as they don't win, we're getting rid of them.
Right.
And it was nice to see it in like the form of like a gay man, you know. And he could have won if he hadn't. Those people always go out during like a double eviction.
Right. No, exactly. It's almost what that's built for, because they have to lose at some point and then get kicked out. He and Taylor would be a good, amazing race duo, for the record. And I also want to congratulate Taylor for being kind of an unusual character for Big Brother. Mm-hmm. Like she was a narrator for us, but she was not like her comedy was not broad, which is sort of what the comedy voice usually is in that show. She really kept it even keel and adult seeming, which feels like is not the prerogative of that show.
She's kind of dry.
The
too.
Show for picking her. Yeah. Very dry, very dry.
Yeah. Which I could see why people would see she was a bitch, as some of them thought early on, but like you could tell that she wasn't. You know?
Yeah, people aren't accustomed to that kind of voice really anymore, you know?
Mm-hmm.
People are too vulnerable and sincere.
Nick Kroll would not win Big Brother.
No, right. He would be out week one or two.
Yeah.
He'd be pooched.
I think Pooch is already selling things on Instagram. And he has such a pretty face.
Yes. Oh, I mean, they routinely do very well in that department on Big Brother.
Yeah. Keep it, though, to Kyle being third in, like, America's Favorite Players rankings.
That's giving... I mean, like, he's not an utterly evil person, but that fan base is giving The South Will Rise Again, if you know what I'm saying.
I know. And it's torn between, like, wanting to be mad and just wanting to be, like, please, some other non-white people scoop him up and like let him become a better person, because otherwise he'll go full Fox News commentator and we don't want more of them.
Right. There are enough. Yeah.
You know,
the quote is filled.
Ugh. Remember Tommy Lara?
I was just thinking about how so many of those names end up actually disappearing. Like, who talks about Ann Coulter anymore? Anyway, we need to end the conversation here. It's getting dark.
Well, she's on next week.
Talking about Don't Worry, Darling.
And that faggot Harry Styles. She would call him a faggot. And you know what? It'd be funny.
No, once out of every 15 times. I mean, look, Ann's a lawyer. She has to be funny every once in a while.
I've watched that sitcom. Ann Coulter, attorney at law.
The other She-Hulk, yes.
All right, that's our show this week. Thank you to Nick Kroll for joining us. And we stopped worrying, darling. Keep It is a Crooked Media production. Our senior producer is Kendra James. Our producer is Chris Lord. Our executive producers are Ira Madison III
and Louis Fortel.
Our editor is Charlotte Landis, and Kyle Seglin is our sound engineer.
Thank you to our digital team, Matt DeGroot, Nara Malkonian, and Delon Villanueva for our production support every week.